יכולתי.
Hi, my name's Carol. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm going to pass around pictures because this is a live meeting. It's really great to get to share pictures. I'm not really good with the Zoom, like, okay, let me do a screen share, stuff like that. There's two pictures of me in high school at my top weight, or towards my top weight. And there's a picture of me at one of my lowest weights, which is the picture of me in the boat. You can probably tell the difference between my top weight and low weight. Though I was one time when I was at my top weight looking in a mirror going like, why do people think I'm fat? I don't understand why people think I'm fat. Like, I mean, you know, that's the denial that goes into this disease. It goes like, wow. You know, it was quite obvious, you know, even though then I wouldn't want to shower because I didn't want to get in the shower because I was kind of too big for the shower. Even though it was like a regular bathtub or, you know, a regular bathtub for someone like from a 1950s house. So I didn't like to bathe. I didn't like to shower. Someone said, well, like, when's the last time you changed the oil in your hair? You know, that was like, I mean, because that was me, right? And clothing was, I should qualify. My top weight somewhere around 325 pounds, give or take, not sure. Scale couldn't weigh me any longer, or our bathroom scale couldn't weigh me any longer. And I have 44 years of abstinence. So I think it's 44. It was 1979, so I think it's 44, yeah. Seeing those pictures reminded me of high school, right? And that literally was, you know, I mean, I was overweight probably at age 8. I was sent home, or was a note was sent home with me that said I was overweight. I might have been 10 to 20 pounds overweight for an 8-year-old kid. And so it was like literally that was then like my mom took me to a doctor and I was put on pills, like, you know, diet pills. Which I didn't like, and I never really did the diet pills. Now as I got older, I probably would have loved them a lot more because I would not like the effect. But as a kid, I didn't like them, and you know, whatever. So I just progressively gained weight. I mean, the bottom line is, I have felt different my entire life. I felt different apart from my entire life. So I was born in Oklahoma City, and my parents got divorced when I was 4 years old, and it was in 1959. It didn't happen, right? It didn't happen to people. It just didn't happen. So I was shipped off to California with my sister, and we wound up in Orange County, or I wound up in Orange County here in Los Angeles. With an Okie accent. It was like 1959, 1960, and Okies were still Okies. They were not, I mean, it was still like this whatever, classes thing or whatever. And so I had this thick Oklahoma accent, and I was different. I remember it was like a 5-year-old birthday party. My nephew is my cousin was 1 day difference. He had this great birthday party with all these kids, with all his friends. I had nobody. It was in my birthday the day before, so I always felt different, apart from. And so the way I dealt with that, I mean, I say that I discovered a fudgesicle at age 5, and I did. I ate that fudgesicle, and it was like the world changed. I got that, like, that warm glow that we talked about before you take that first compulsive bite. I got that warm glow, and I mean, it was my life was not... I can't say it was miserable at age 4 or 5 because I'm not sure. I mean, maybe a little oblivious, but I'm sure there's a lot of tension in the room from my parents. And so it was like, so I found a way to escape. And I escaped into fudgesicles. Basically I discovered food, right? And that kept me from being a heroin addict like my sister, right? I mean, so, or a raging alcoholic like, you know, my mom. So that was like, my grandmother, both grandmothers were overweight. We talk about my grandmother, my father's side, being as tall as she was wide, you know. And I come from that lineage. I mean, that's my heritage. That is true. I mean, it's not like I'm the odd person off from my family. Oh, no. I'm just like everyone else in my family. And, of course, in my family, we all found a way to try to escape from the family because none of us wanted to be in the family. So literally, it's like, you know, my oldest brother, was like working at a zoo at age 8, right? I mean, he's got out of the house. I mean, my sister turned to drugs and alcohol to get out of the house. My brother thought if he could just make enough money, so he was working, and he was the clown, and he was out and about just trying to find something to make him feel okay. And I was this quiet child in the home, while there was this drinking and fighting going on between my mom and my stepfather, and I would just be glued to the TV, right? And I tried to glue to the TV and just try to get some food in me, and if I could just zero it all out. So that's my upbringing, right? Like, I just don't want to feel, I don't want to know, I just want to disappear. And that led me wanting to kill myself. And I say all the time that the reason why I might kill myself was to make your life better. It wasn't to get me out of my misery. It was to get you out of your misery that you had to deal with me. And that's the compulsive reader that you, that high school kid. I used to walk around high school with my head bowed. And I wouldn't hang out with you because if someone saw you hanging out with me, then you go like, oh, I stay with Terrell. Oh, well, we can't be your friend anymore because obviously you're just like you have no standards. You're like you. So I was this contagion that was just bad, and I wanted to die. And so I went to my first OA meeting when I was 17. My parents got sober in AA, and my stepfather one more time was haranguing me about like, you fat ass kid, why don't you get out and do something? You know, all you do is lay around the house and watch TV. Get out and make some friends, do something. And I said something like, if I could, I would, or something like that. And I guess that triggered something in him that was maybe I was hopeless or whatever, that I need help. So they must have turned me on to Overeaters Anonymous. So I went to my first meeting in 1973. And at my first meeting, this man got up and said he lost 100 pounds. And it gave me something because I believed him. It gave me that one thing I never had for the first 18 years of my life or 17 years of my life. Hope. I was hopeless. I knew when I was graduating from high school, and I knew like I'm going to go off to college. I'm going to waste 4 years of college because I'm fat. I've just wasted 4 years of high school because I'm fat. I wasted 2 years of junior high because I'm fat. I'm going to waste the rest of my life because I'm fat. That's how I walked in the doors of Overeaters Anonymous, that my weight, my body size, was going to determine my life. What's going to determine whether I'm a good, whether I have a wonderful life or not, was my body size. So he gave me this hope that I didn't have to live the rest of my life weighing 300 pounds. And so I am at that meeting. You folks talk about steps. Therefore, my sick alcoholic parents, I didn't need those steps. I just need to lose a little weight and get a few friends. At 17 years old, there's a lot that, you know, it's kind of, I find it very difficult sometimes. Or I find it amazing that some 17-year-olds, we can come in and get the program and get it, like, literally get it. You talked about writing an inventory. I had a deep, dark secret I couldn't tell another living soul. That's one of the reasons I hated myself and one of the reasons that I felt a part of. And I couldn't do the fourth step. Or I couldn't do the fifth step. And I also was afraid that if I started writing that inventory or did that, if I pulled the string, I would unravel and you'd have to lock me up. I was so afraid I was going to have to be locked up. If I started looking at Terrell, because I was doing everything in my power not to look at Terrell. I was binging my brains out not to look at Terrell. And then you talk about God, and I was raised, I went to Sunday school 2 years in a row without missing Sunday, got a yoke to European, joined I was Southern Baptist, and so I got part of that club, and so I knew about God. God was all powerful, omnipotent. And so here I am weighing 325 pounds. My parents are drinking and fighting. And I'd pray to God. I said, God, please, when I wake up, let me be thin. God, please, when I wake, please have my parents stop drinking and fighting. And I woke up the same way. My parents kept drinking and fighting. And I got the deal. God hid in me. And my punishment for that horrible person that I am is that I was going to have these alcoholic parents, and I'm going to be fat. So I couldn't turn my will, my life, into that asshole that was punishing me. Like, literally, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't do that. That's impossible. Like, why would I succumb myself to that again? Like, I mean, he hates me. I'm not talking to him. He's not talking to me. We're good, right? Because I'm going to hell or whatever. But you did offer me this grace sheet of paper, and this grace sheet of paper was a food plan. So I took the food plan, and I worked it quite well. And I lost about 125 pounds, 150 pounds, about 6 months. Because I was a 17-year-old boy. I was eating two eggs and orange for breakfast. I was working on a shipping and loading dock all day long, lifting mag rims between high school and college. And so I lost the weight. So I'm here to tell you that thin is not well. Because I lost the weight, but I still had all the resentment. Well, I had more resentments now. Because people treated me differently. They treated me differently. And I was resentful they did that, and I didn't know how people would be nice to me. My sister once told me, she said, "Terrell, you wouldn't know nice behavior came up to slap you. You wouldn't appreciate good behavior came and slapped me in the face." Like, literally, I was like, don't be good to me. I don't deserve to be treated well. I deserve to be treated poorly. That's who I am. And so I lost the weight. And we're very clear in this program that says if you don't deal with the things that make you seek excess food, you will go out and eat again. And that's what I did. I had to go back out and eat again. Because I had to deal with all those things I didn't deal with the things that made me seek excess food in the first place. So another thing I knew to do as a compulsive eater, my solution to everything was, let's go eat. Let's go get some donuts. And so I put weight back on. In college, I got back up to about 250 pounds, something like that. If I had my old journals, I could tell you exactly how much I weighed, because every day when I was doing journals, because I went to Sonoma State, this, we call it Granola U, you know, it was very much, and I learned about, I would like journal, and I'd be like, okay, at the top left-hand corner of the page was the date, and the top right-hand corner was my weight, because that determines what my day was going to be like, right? I don't know if you ever can relate to that. In college, I had to deal with that deep, dark secret that I couldn't tell another living soul. And that was that I liked men. And I did not. This was back in the day when, you know, like, I thought gay men were hanging around schoolyards with green slime coming out of their mouth and trench coats. But you know, we get these ideas, right? And I'd love to tell the story about me coming out, because this is a compulsive reader. I went to everyone I knew in college and asked them, do you think I'm gay? What do you think? Do you think I'm gay? What do you think? And the reason why that's important to talk about in an OA meeting is because I am gay, but I could not be gay unless it was okay with everybody else. So literally, I don't know if you, that means I can't be me unless you approve. That's a compulsive reader thinking. And so I came out of the closet. Someone finally said, "Terrell, you don't have to make a decision. Do whatever, what happens next, right? Just one, I guess, one person at a time, right? You know." I never went back. I've got really good recovery in that area. During that whole coming out process, developed this nervous stomach, and I had a hard time eating. And then there was the granola U. There was like this kind of fasting thing on. And then you folks taught me, because the first time when I came in when I was 17 years old, I was going to a meeting a week, whether I needed it or not, just for moral support. I like to call it, I was a tourist. Like, literally, I was just stopping by, getting some good feelings, getting some good vibes, going out and doing it, right? I did learn certain things, right? I mean, I had a head full of program, a belly full of food. And one of the things you folks taught me was, it's not the 100th bite that puts the weight on, it's the first. So I didn't take the first bite all day long, so I had victory over food. I mean, I don't know if you had to understand that concept, but maybe it's my Southern Baptist upbringing, but victory over food. I had victory over food, right? You know, and I would go, I got down to 160 pounds by eating nothing but 9 or 10 donuts at 2 o'clock in the morning, driving home from the discotheque to deal with all that rejection I felt from everyone that rejected me in the dark disco when I was afraid to move my little finger, because I knew if I moved my little finger, someone would walk at me and say, "Fat boy, what are you doing here? Look at you, you're too fat and you're too ugly." You see the picture of me on that boat. I wasn't too fat and I wasn't too ugly. But that's the thinking, right? That's the thinking. And so, I love telling this story. I remember when because I would, you know, I'd pass by the donut stand on the way home and I'd think Victor over food. And one thing I remember one time I was at a donut counter getting my donuts, because donuts is my thing, because it's my absence is no sugar and no flour. And to me, donuts are a speedball. If you're an addict, you know what that means. Because speedball is you take heroin and crystal meth or something like that and mix them together. And when I first heard that from an addict, I said, what the hell? That's like two opposite directions. He says, no, it just makes you level. It makes you, And that's what donuts do for me. Because sugar amps me up. Flour makes me tired. You used to put them together and fry them up, and I got, And that's what I wanted. I went, numb. It says in our literature that we're overly sensitive or very sensitive people. We are. That's why life is hard when it comes at us. We need to be real. It's hard out there, and I just need my donuts so I can breathe. You know, so I can just breathe. And so I remember being in front of this donut counter going like, okay, donuts, you don't control me. Because, you know, I got program up in here. Donuts, you don't control me. Because if you controlled me, you would be eating me. Now that's insanity. Normal people don't talk to donuts as to who's in control of the situation here. They don't. Anyway, so what happened was I was maintaining my weight at 160 pounds on the donut diet, which you do anything all day long, maybe a salad or something like that, and get 9 or 10 donuts somewhere. And never a dozen. If you order a dozen, if you eat a dozen donuts at one time, you're a compulsive overeater. If you eat 9 or 10, you're not a compulsive overeater. I have my rules, and I should also be very clear, there weren't really donuts, because when I'm in my disease, I have this little thing called financial security, and so I don't pay for holes in my food. So I'm not going to pay for a donut that has a hole. I didn't eat Swiss cheese, because there's holes in my food. And maybe you don't understand that concept, but there's holes, I'm missing my food. And so what happened was I was being fitted for contact lenses, and my eye doctor who operated my eyes. He couldn't get my prescription right. And back then, you get your prescription, you come back 2 weeks later to get your contact lenses. So after 3 or 4 attempts of trying to get my prescription right, and I mean he's good, so it wasn't like he was faulty. He said, "Terrell, is there a history of hypoglycemia or diabetes in your family?" And I said, well, yeah. I mean, my grandmother died because they're taking body parts, right? I mean, taking toes and taking limbs, you know. He said, "Terrell, are you eating sugar?" And, I mean, why do you say the response like that? I mean, a question like that. There's only one response. Maybe a little. Well, maybe a little. And so, he said, "Well, Terrell, if you don't stop eating sugar, you'll be blind within a year." I then went off to Europe and spent 6 weeks in Europe and gained 30 pounds in 6 weeks, 5 pounds a week, traveling through Europe. And I was in a plaza in Vienna going like, I'm trying to kick sugar because I knew it. I had the book, The Sugar Blues, that not endorsing it. I'm just saying I had this book, Sugar Blues. And I didn't touch it because if I touch it, I take responsibility for the fact that I was eating sugar. And I wasn't done yet. I still needed my food to get me through the travels of Europe. It was scary. I was traveling through Europe on my own a little bit. It was scary. I didn't know how to deal with life. So I had to eat donuts. And so I was in this plaza going like, I can't stop. Please help me. I cannot stop. And that was the first step. I took the first step. I then proceeded to go up. Because I was sick. I was physically ill from kicking sugar. What happened was then I came back. Because I knew I hit the last house on the block when I was 17. And I never want to be in that last house. So I stayed away from it. Right? I mean, I didn't want to be... Got it. I didn't want to be in that last house. But guess what? I'm a compulsive overeater. I don't like it. I don't have to like it. I've come here to save my ass. Not for any other reason. Not to save your ass. Not to save anyone else's ass except mine. I have to stay abstinent. Because if not, you've now heard who I was. And most of you people know me, and I guess that's why I spend more time on what it was like. Because you've seen me grow. You've seen me in this program. So when I talk about how I want to kill myself on a daily basis, you people might go like, that's not you, Terrell. That's like, you're like what? But I want you to understand where I came from. Because you know who I am today. Where I've come. And I mean, now, granted, I've written a lot of friggin' inventories. I mean, I've called my sponsors. I mean, my current sponsor's got dementia, so I guess she's now my ex-sponsor because she doesn't remember how she knows me. She knows me. She just doesn't remember which I said, you know, from program or meetings. She goes, which meetings? Like, you know, so it's time for me to find another one, which is in itself an ordeal. So let's talk about, so the program is the 12 steps, right? I mean, I can tell you right now, I worked the 12-step program. I did all the steps. I do the tools. That's how I get to be who I am today. So let's talk about who I am today. Some of you might know me, some of you might not. 44 years of abstinence is an amazing, wonderful thing. I like to say that if you're new, which means 10 years or less of abstinence, hang in there, baby, because it'll get better. Especially when you're a 7-year mark, it's going to give you, and it's shitty at 7 years, but it will get better. It will get better. Today, I have my own business. The reason why I have my own business is because I was, I'm HIV positive. So I was spending money because I was going to die, you know. Then they came up with a cocktail and I'm living now. And you wake up one day and go, like, damn, I got paid off these credit cards. I mean, maybe that wasn't a spiritual thing to think like, well, I'm dying. I mean, I just run up my credit cards, right? You know, I told you, I don't work a great program. I'm the first one to tell you, I don't work this great program. Apparently, I work a program good enough to keep me happy and joyous and free, and that somewhere close to my normal body size. So it must be good enough, right? But I mean, I always feel like if you follow me, you might go like, and you call yourself absent? Oh, you think you're working a good program? Really? Really? But it's for me. It's my program. And it's working for me. And so I said this little prayer. I said, God, you got to help me. I'm spending more money than I'm making. Either you got to help me make more money or spend less. Because I'm in deficit spending. And within a month after that, my coworker came to me and said, his fiance's sister uses the same accounting software that we do where I was working. Could I help her? And I said, yes. Now, before I've said that prayer, I might have said no. But you see, I go to the gym at night. She's in Santa Monica. I live in West Hollywood. No. But that was my first client, and I own my own business. And I have associates who work for me. One associate lives in London now. And it's amazing. And people tell me all the time my business, Charlie, I don't know how I could do this without you. You're a godsend. Like you cannot retire. If you retire, I'm retiring. I get constant praise from at work because I do a good job. I'm showing me a service. I don't look at them as ka-ching. I look at them, how can I help you? Right? I have an apartment here in West Hollywood, a rent control apartment, but I have a condo in Puerto Vallarta that I bought last 2 years ago. It's on the beach, overlooks the ocean. I'm in the South Tower. My brother lives in the North Tower with his wife. I'm close to my brother, very close to my brother, which the family that we want to try to escape from, we've now come back, right? My oldest brother is 9 years older than me. We see each other once every blue moon or like every whenever, but that's okay. Like 9 year age difference, like I was 9 years old. He was going off to college. So it's not like, and he was out of the house because he was trying to get away from the family. So that's where I get to be like, okay. So I have this good relationship with my brother. I have friends who really appreciate me and know that I'm loved. Now, I'm 68, so 28 years ago, had this, God, I'll finish up, had this 40th birthday, and there was hundreds of people that showed up for this birthday. I ran into someone this last weekend and said, remember that birthday party? And after that birthday party where hundreds of people showed up for my birthday party, I went to my sister and said, some time afterwards, and go like, I don't feel part of it. I feel like they're still tolerated. I just feel like I'm just tolerated. And if this is, if this is the best it gets, this is the best it gets. Guess what? At 18 years of absence, 19, it wasn't the best it gets. It got better. And that's all I can say with you. Is baby, hang in there. Stay absent. Work the program. It gets better. And better. And better. But one thing you folks taught me, say yes. Because we want to, as composers, we just want to say no. We want to hide out, isolate, and not participate in life. And that's why we ate. Thank you for the show. Really? No.
Thank you so much.
Michael, yeah. You can ask me a question every day of the week.
He's my sponsor, so I gotta.
Ainsley.
Okay, thank you. That was very inspiring. And I'm wondering about daily rituals, if you still keep track of the food that you send to me by
yourself. Yes. So my daily ritual is I meditate for 20 minutes in the morning. I keep track of my food on an app. I forgot to mention, I just spent the summer in Europe, traveling through Europe. And that's a big difference between the last time I traveled in Europe on my own. I put in 30 pounds in 6 weeks. My pants got really tight this time because, I keep track of my food in an app. And traveling through Europe is kind of difficult, going well, how do you, I mean, I don't have a scale with me. I'm in restaurants all the time. How do I figure up, God bless the Portuguese, the Bilbaoans. Literally you order, some olives, they'll put it on bread for you. Everything is put on bread. I don't eat bread. So I didn't do it during when I was in Europe, right? Because it's useless. I don't know. The good news is, since I got back to the United States, my scale's here. I started making my salads. I was doing, all of a sudden, I'm going, okay, I'm in a losing absence mode right now. So that's part of the food plan. And literally, in the morning, I have a sponsor who calls me every friggin' day. Every friggin' day. Except he'll tell you differently. He says, Terrell's always gone on vacation. He's going skiing. He's going somewhere. And so I take his call. He reads me a part of that. I also do a morning reading that I get. I have an app, a meditation app that I listen to. It lasts for about 10 minutes, but then I do another 10 minutes. So I set an alarm for 20 minutes, actually 21 minutes. When I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm have that 2 o'clock. I don't know if you ever wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and your mind goes. It just goes. So I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a supreme being. I don't believe in a God of a parking spot. I believe that your universe is chaotic. I believe the universe is wild and crazy. And so I need something to deal with that. And the way I've learned to deal with that is to have a higher power that I can turn my will and my life over the care of. And my higher power is peace, love, kindness, hope, patience, trust, acceptance, gratitude, laughter, and joy. And sometimes I just repeat those over and over again. You could say the Serenity Prayer over and over again. It takes my mind away from, because the problem is my mind. The problem is my mind that will make me want to go somewhere. That will want to make me go either fantasizing about the future or regretting the past. Right? So if I stay here in the moment, if I stay right here in this moment, I'm good. And so sometimes I have to go I'm going to change this up. I'll be be kind. Be peaceful. Be loving. Be hopeful. Be trusting. Sometimes it's trustworthy. So I just try and think different ways to have my higher power, to look at my higher power in a different way. Because when I turn my will, my life over the care of peace, love, kindness, hope, patience, acceptance, gratitude, my life gets better. When I turn my life over to fear, anxiety, less than, deprivation, I get scared. And when I get scared, I want to run and hide and just run and hide. And the best way I can run and hide is to food. Because food will make me hidden. Food will make me, well, it'll make me hidden. Okay.
Can you tell me the last time you were very afraid about something and how you dealt with it with tools or programs?
The thing that comes to mind, I mean, okay, so a lot of times it's just even like, oh, I'm going to talk to a client's accountant, or I get an email that goes, I've learned that it's a boogeyman. It's not real. But I will tell you one thing about this trip to Europe. When I was planning this trip to Europe like 6 or 9 months ago, I knew I was going to spend some time traveling on my own. I mean, most of the time I was with my associate who I used to date like 20-something years ago. We're friends. And I was staying with him and his husband in London, and then we rented an apartment together in Barcelona. So I spent a lot of time with him, right? I mean, literally, that means maybe 2 weeks on my own. And I thought about those 2 weeks 9 months ago. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody. And I was thinking, like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do on my own? Oh, my God. Last time I was in Europe on my own, I gained 30 pounds. Like, oh, my God. What am I going to do? Am I just going to walk out the door and turn right? Oh, my God. What am I going to, right? And I talked myself through it and said, just do it. Just, yes. And guess what I did while I was in Europe on my own? I walked out the door and turned right. Mm-hmm. And saw what's going on. Which is program, because program gave me the ability to appreciate and go like, I'm here. Yes. Okay. I'm here. Like, take it in. Which is a whole different way of me, when I was in Europe the first time, I was literally riding the trains because I had a Eurail pass and I ate through all my money. And I'm on a Eurail pass, getting up at a train station, getting the vending machine, buying chocolate, getting back on the train, passing out, going to the next train stop, getting off the train, buying more chocolate, at the vending machine, getting back on the train and passing out. That's how I spent my last week in Europe. The first time, when I put on 30 pounds in 6 weeks. The difference between program, before I was in program, friggin' amazing. Michael. I had to keep him humble.
So you mentioned the difficulty in getting a sponsor. And it's hard. So maybe you could share your experience with the sponsors that you've had. What was the process you went through?
The process in getting sponsors. So I went through a couple of sponsors in the beginning. If you're new, but don't give me this like, well, I can't find anybody. Lord knows. There's enough people in these rooms to stand up and go like you're a sponsor. I do want someone who's got some time. I'd like to have someone that has more time with me, which means I'm looking at an old lady. Right? I mean, that's the bottom line. But anyway, the first few sponsors, this one guy asked to be my sponsor. When I gave my fourth step, I didn't get my people gave my fourth step until I was 3 years abstinent. I don't recommend that. But he said this to me. He said this thing that said, I asked him to be my sponsor. He said yes. He says, have you written your fourth step? I said no. He says, well, have it to me by the end of the week. I said, no, you don't understand. I've been trying to write a new fourth step for 3 years. Once again, I don't want to pull the string that I'd unravel and you have to lock me up. He said, no, you don't understand. You will have your inventory to me by the end of the week. And I had to stop going to meetings. And I had to write my inventory during lunch. And all these visions about what my inventory is going to look like. And I wrote my inventory and gave it to him. That's why I believe that it shouldn't take any longer than a week to write an inventory. It's like if you're trying to write a great American novel, great. Or if your ego gets involved, like, oh my God, I got to be this perfect inventory. It's got to get it all out. No. Baby, if you stick around long enough, you'll get it all out. That's what the 10-step process is, right? You don't need to write the inventory of all inventories. Just write a friggin' inventory. I mean, I've told people, like, literally, like, yeah, it should maybe take you. I mean, they talk about in the OA, in the AA, like in the beginning, they would take their inventory right there in the hospital bed, right? They did their 4-step right there in the hospital bed. So it's, to me, it's like, okay, just write your friggin' inventory. Get it over with, give it away, and then you can write another one later or do a 10-step. So my process with Natalie was, because, I mean, Natalie was the one when I got when I was my 8 or 9 years absent, something like that. I asked all these women to be my sponsor because there wasn't a lot of men. And they all said, no, they don't sponsor men. I said, I'm gay. No, sponsor me. So finally, Natalie, I didn't want to ask Natalie because she had like umpteen babies and I wanted to be special. Call me crazy, but I want to be like unique sponsee. Like, and she said yes. And she was my sponsor for 20 years, something like that. And then she got dementia and. I miss that woman. So then I got Phyllis. Phyllis was, I wanted to ask Phyllis. Finally, I asked her, and she said, well, I thought I was already sponsoring you. I was calling her, right? But I didn't, that's how I got Phyllis. Before I got Phyllis, I asked someone to sponsor me, and they went like, oh my God, you want me to sponsor you? Like, Terrell wants me to sponsor him? That's that star VIP treatment that you don't motherfuckers don't give to me. You know what I mean? Because that type of treatment that you give to someone who's got some time and experience in this program, I'm a compulsive eater just like you are. Reason why I like this thing so much, because I get to disappear in the back row. I get the fellowship, but I disappear in the back row. I do not want to be a star or a VIP, because I will lose my absence over that. So how am I going to get my next sponsor? I'm open to it now. I also have an amazing God squad. That people with long term abstinence that I call up when I'm in trouble. I mean, with Phyllis, I'd call them and go like, okay, I'm checking, I got nothing. When I tell you I got nothing, I mean, I have nothing. I don't have a problem. I really don't have problems in my life. You know, something might irritate me, but I'm going like, oh well. Like after 44 years of the program, because I came in when I was young, I feel like my natural response is a healthy response these days. Not when I was new. I mean, my second year of absence, I cut my hand trying to take the knife away from my lover at the time, because he was going to slash the sofa because I didn't let him keep spending on my credit cards. Second year of abstinence, baby. If you want a relationship, go for it. We all have high drama, right? I mean, if you're new, right? So I've got this God squad that I talk to on a regular basis, that I hang out with, and I share my experience, strength, and hope. Or, I mean, they share their experience, strength, and hope with me. So, and if I have an issue, I go call them up. So, I mean, I don't know when the next time a sponsor is going to come in my life, but one will. But sometimes I get to feeling so guilty I don't have a sponsor, because, you know, everyone talks about their sponsor, and I feel like I should have a sponsor, so therefore I need to have a sponsor. But, I mean, you know, I know a couple people who've got 30, 40, 50 years that don't have sponsors, you know. I don't know, like, literally, I don't know what I'm going to call her about. Time for one more?
You. Hey, thanks so much. Good to see you. You mentioned losing abstinence, like a weight loss abstinence or something, like coming back from Europe. Can you just talk about what that looks like for you and the difference between that and a diet?
Okay, so what's interesting, losing abstinence or regular abstinence, and that, why is it losing abstinence, not a diet? I'm a moderate mealer. So moderate mealer means I'm not, I don't, I mean, I guess I didn't used to do a lot of weight measuring. I now do. So basically, my abstinence is no sugar, no flour. Now, that's a big box, right? I mean, it's a big box. I could eat a jumbo at a salad bar and still be abstinent, right? Because my abstinence, everyone's abstinence is different. And I always like to say my abstinence will kill you. Your abstinence will kill me. I also like to say my higher power will kill you. Your higher power will kill me. But the losing abstinence to me is I am now back in my environment, in my home, in my kitchen, that I can now prepare the food that I want. And is it a diet? A diet means I'm eating fewer calories than I need, or that to lose weight, then I'm on a diet. But if a diet means like, oh, there's an end to this, and that once I get this, I'm going to be rewarded, I get to have this wonderful... No. It just means that my food has now gotten tighter. I don't want to say better or good, because that's value. My food has gotten tighter because I now can put my salad on the scale. I can now put the ham on a scale, and I can be more accountable to my app. And that's to me a losing abstinence. So I can be abstinent and eat a jungle, or I can be abstinent and eat my salad. That's a big salad. Trust me, it's a big salad. No. But, you know, it's like, oh well, it's a salad. Time for one more?
Hey, Carol. Thank you so much for your share. I would love to hear you talk about, like, I heard you say before, like, the program brought you to participate in life. And I would love to know, like, how do you apply these principles to your career? How do you show up for yourself? How has that, what's your journey with that?
That's it. I show up. Right? I mean, the program has enabled me to do that. Right? I am now... I'll wrap it up. I when I get scared, I go, I don't live my life based upon fear. I do not live my life based upon fear. I did that before I came to program. Sometimes I go like, Terrell, act like you're a member of Overeaters Anonymous. You have a program. Work it. Participate. Be here. Be here. Do not shirk and go back to this. Because that's waiting for me. Any second. I eat one bite of German chocolate cake. That's me. That's me. I'm still Terrell. This is Terrell. I'm just now looking at life differently. I don't know if that makes sense, a question, but... Okay. Now it's time for my wonderful sponsee, who I love and